From what we've heard so far, it's evident that more needs to be done to ensure we're helping patients with visual impairment to cope with the challenges they face. When individuals experience sight loss, it impacts on every aspect of their lives. The things they miss most can be as simple as reading a book. Where there's central vision loss from macular damage, techniques have been developed to help patients adapt to using their still healthy peripheral retina. Other techniques, such as steady eye strategy, help patients with field loss that affects normal visual scanning. We sent Anthony McGrail to speak to Professor Chris Dickinson to find out how useful such visual training can be.
So first of all, welcome to Advances in Eye Care, Chris. Can you begin by explaining what eccentric viewing is and where it came from?
Well, if an individual with low vision has a scotoma that involves the fovea, then when they look at an object, it disappears into that scotoma and they can't see it. So eccentric viewing is the word used to describe the strategy where they move that image onto an area of the retina that is more effective, and so that they can see something. And this new area that they choose is called a PRL. It's a preferred retinal locus that they've chosen instead of their fovea. And in fact, anybody who's normally sighted can experience this for themselves, because everyone has a scotoma at the fovea in under nighttime scotopic conditions, because you haven't got any rods at the fovea. So if you want to look at something like a very faint star, you look straight at it, it disappears. But if you look slightly off to one side and use your eccentric viewing, then you get that view back again.
So can you explain how patients with AMD adapt to eccentric viewing?
Well, they don't need to do anything at all when only one eye is affected. So it would be a patient with AMD who had started to have problems in their second eye, who would have to start to, it would become apparent that they had some difficulty that they weren't able to manage. So it's only an issue when the second eye develops loss of areas of vision near the fovea. And when you see illustrations of what a central scotoma is like, you very often see a picture and it's covered with a black patch in the middle of it. But there are very few patients who appreciate that that's what their vision is like. So they don't really realise that there's an issue of that at all. They don't really realise that this black patch and they have to move it off to one side and change their fixation. So research is suggesting that the PRL just develops spontaneously in most people over a period of perhaps 6 months from when their second eye starts to be affected. And it's possible that at the beginning, these PRLs, these areas that are being used in the retina, are actually quite large and not really very well defined, and there might be several of them. And then over a period of months, perhaps, it comes down to being perhaps one or two preferred areas that are used, maybe for different visual tasks, and that these become a little bit more precise and a little bit more organised and efficient. So although people might seem to just naturally assume these different PRLs and seem to just not really need any effort to do this as it's just occurring spontaneously, it seems like one of the most difficult things to come to terms with is actually managing to link the eye movements into this PRL and to make the PRL into the oculomotor reference. So all eye movements are designed to place the images onto the fovea, and it seems like actually placing the images onto the PRL instead might be something that is much more difficult. So whilst patients might cope with eccentric viewing static tasks, it might be much more difficult for dynamic things where there are eye movements involved. And one of the things that obviously springs to mind there is reading task, where you have to link this whole sequence of eye movements that you have to plan in order to find your way across a page and back to the beginning of the next line.
And what methods are used to train people to do this?
Well, there are lots of different methods which have been suggested. So sometimes this is just about the static eccentric viewing position, and sometimes it's related to this dynamic use of the reading eye movements in particular. So there's also a feature in reading as well, where you've got to actually decode information. You've got to decode groups of letters and make them into words, and they have to make sense. And it's been found that peripheral retina doesn't seem to do that as well as the foveal retina does. So there's also been training techniques that are about this process of training the peripheral retina to read, which is something that it doesn't seem to be very good at doing. So if we take those in sequence for the static tasks, then it can be things like a clock face, where you have an object in the centre with letters or numbers around it, and you ask the person to look towards the number 3 or the number 9, and various different numbers, and see which one gives them the clearest view of the central target. Or just asking the person to look at the practitioner's face and say, what parts of my face can you see? Am I wearing spectacles? Can you look to the right or left, look over my shoulder, see if that gives a clearer view? And that sort of very simple thing can often help people to fixate in the right places. And if it's for reading, then sometimes training people to make eye movements between very small, precise targets to practice the accuracy of their saccadic eye movements is one way in which that's done.
So are these methods the ones that are used in the UK?
Well, in the UK, the one particular technique which most people might have come across involves something called steady eye strategy. And the idea of steady eye strategy is that the person has to keep their eyes and head still and then move the text across in order to image different areas of the text in sequence in the clear area of their vision. Now, steady eye strategy is a great technique in any circumstances where there's a very limited field of view. And so low vision practitioners, regardless of eccentric viewing, often teach people to use steady eye strategy when they're looking through a high-powered magnifier. So anything which restricts the field of view and stops the individual from planning their eye movements, the normal sequence of reading eye movements, then steady eye strategy works very well.
Is it possible to combine eccentric viewing training and steady eye strategy at the same time?
Yes, it certainly is. And in most cases, I think if you're going to do eccentric viewing, I think steady eye strategy is a very good thing to combine it with, because it does avoid the need to make these eye movements and have very precise saccadic control of where your eyes are going that you would normally see in a reading task. You can effectively leave the eyes in the same place and try and move the print into that location. So it's a very good combination.
Would you agree that steady eye strategy is easier with CCTV systems than normal optical devices?
Yes, I certainly would. And I sometimes use a CCTV for training patients if I find that they have difficulty doing the technique with an optical device. With a CCTV, you certainly on high magnification, you've normally only got a couple of words visible on the screen. So you can't use normal reading eye movements. You haven't got enough space ahead. You don't have enough information about what's ahead of you to plan the normal reading eye movements. So it's very easy to get somebody to fixate on the screen and scroll the text on the reading platform underneath the camera. And so it does tend to come much more naturally to patients on a CCTV. They almost have no alternative but to use steady eye strategy. So in 2006, the Macular Society introduced their programme of training, which they wanted to have available nationwide. So they have a network of trainers, around 250 trainers at the present time, who are in all different locations in the UK. And at the start of the programme, those are the original trainers were people who had macular disease themselves. They were trained in eccentric viewing and steady eye strategy. And then they cascaded the technique off to learners of their own. And now some of the trainers are visually impaired themselves, but others are sighted volunteers who've been taught this technique and who teach it to other people, usually in their local area, by going to visit people in their own home. And they offer approximately 3 one-hour training sessions to people about 1 month apart and to take them through these particular techniques. So my research has been involved with my colleagues Ahalya Subramanian from City University and Robert Harper from Manchester Royal Eye Hospital. We were commissioned by the Macular Society as independent researchers to look at their programme and to see whether it was effective or not in terms of improving people's reading performance. Beginning in 2012, we began this study to look at the effectiveness of the training. And we recruited 200 learners and collected data from 120 of them. We looked at the effect on reading speed and near word reading acuity before and after the training, and the reported difficulty of the participants in carrying out their daily activities, their quality of life, and their mood and life satisfaction. but we didn't find any significant effects for these learners overall on reading speed, and only a very slight, although it was significant, effect on the size of print which could be read. So some learners did improve their reading speed, and they did have an improvement in their life satisfaction. But despite these rather unimpressive objective findings, 68% of the learners thought they'd achieved a benefit from the training. But there's probably an effect of that is partly due to meeting the trainers themselves. They thought the trainers were a very big contribution to how successful the programme was. The trainers were very well prepared, very professional, very well trained. And just meeting somebody with macular disease and having a chance to talk to them about the problems certainly made their learners feel a whole lot better.
So, in your opinion, is there any benefit to optometrists discussing eccentric viewing with patients?
I certainly think it's worthwhile, but I wouldn't necessarily think that it's always going to be that sort of terminology. So I certainly would explain to patients what was happening to their vision, and with patients with macular disease who have patchy loss of vision and they appreciate that there are some missing areas in their vision, they realise that they're missing words or they're getting letters and numbers wrong when they're reading out print, then I'd explain to them why it was that was happening, and that one of the ways of dealing with that is trying to find a good bit to use at the back of the eye to work with. If they do happen to notice a central scotoma on the Amsler chart, and that's by no means inevitable, quite a lot of patients don't notice it at all on the Amsler, then I would explain to them exactly what was happening. And when they're looking at the central spot on the Amsler and it keeps coming and going, I'd explain to them that that was their vision and that they were in control of that. It was their fixation changing that was making that happen. Because some patients believe that that's just something which is happening, that their vision is coming and going, and they've just got to wait for it to come back again. And I explained to them that that was under their control and they could fixate and do something about that. And that's often a very useful technique for them to appreciate.
Would you recommend that the patient has eccentric viewing training before proceeding with any magnifiers or LVAs, or do both at the same time during the initial assessment?
I think you can take either approach to that. Some facilities, some training institutions would tend to go for the eccentric viewing first and would leave a magnifier to later, on the basis of perhaps not overloading the person with too many different things happening at the same time. However, it's almost inevitable that somebody is going to be using a magnifier as well in order to make the best use of their eccentric viewing, their preferred retinal locus, because it isn't the fovea, it is going to have lower acuity. So they're probably not going to have access to small print unless they're using a magnifier. So you might take the approach, well, they're going to have to use a magnifier at some stage. We might as well introduce this in the way that it's going to be used alongside the eccentric viewing. So either approach works depending on the circumstances.
How do you decide which patients would benefit from eccentric viewing training?
I think personally, in my clinical practice, then I would have a very clear idea that I would only start to introduce a patient to eccentric viewing training if they were having great difficulty using a magnifier and it wasn't producing the effect that I was expecting it to. So if the patient was using a magnifier and was able to satisfy all their requirements, then I wouldn't mention eccentric viewing training to them, or even steady eye strategy sometimes if it's a low-powered magnifier. Patients who've got lots of different magnifiers of different powers, but they can't really tell the difference between them, they just say that none of them are any good. That sort of patient, again, suggests that magnification isn't the answer if really they're not able to appreciate what magnification can do. And patients who have just as much difficulty with big print as they do with small print, those patients, again, are an indication that they're not going to manage just by increasing the size of the print. It's going to require a different strategy in addition to that.
Is there any particular patient group that have difficulty adapting?
I think it's more about patient expectations that have difficulty. So people who've been very good readers in the past or very fast readers in the past have great difficulty in slowing themselves down to the level that they need to do, certainly with a technique like steady eye strategy. So they're very motivated and incredibly positive about wanting to learn to read, but they find the reading letter by letter that they need to do when they start with steady eye strategy is just too frustrating for them. So one of the things that patients like that often do is they start to guess what the end of the word is. And that doesn't really help them at all, because it doesn't help them to find where they need to go next after that. So I've developed some training programs for patients like that, where they just have to read random sequences of letters. If you have them reading words, they just guess what's coming. You've got to stop them and just have them reading random sequences. But they've got to have a very realistic expectation that they're not going to read fast in the future. It will get them back to survival reading, probably. But if they get back to fluent reading and leisure reading, that's a bit of a bonus for them.
Would you encourage the patient to use eccentric viewing during a refraction routine?
Yeah, it's a really helpful thing to do when the person's reading the letter chart. Then you can ask them and encourage them to look in different positions around the letters. And also you can get an idea from the way in which they read a letter chart, just whether they are using eccentric viewing or not. And that also enables you to get them to change their strategy. So if you realise, for example, that they're reading just the first letter on the line all the way down, then it gives you a good idea about where their scotoma might be.
Do you recommend the use of typoscopes when eccentric viewing training?
So a typoscope could be effective, and it could be a way of giving the person a fixation point to look at, which is close to the place where they're reading. So you could put a small star or something like that for them to look at, that's just over the top of the slot that you have in the typoscope, which might encourage, for example, to look upwards. Often you can get exactly the same effect just by encouraging them to look in that direction.
Looking to the future, how do you think eccentric viewing techniques will change?
I think although eccentric viewing training has been around for quite a long time, it was quite a long time after that people really understood about PRLs, because it was only when different sorts of imaging became available that you could actually visualise the fundus of the patient and the target they were looking at and see them both simultaneously. And so then people started to understand what a PRL was. And it's only relatively recently that research has been done on that. So as that increases and people understand more about PRLs and how patients choose a PRL and what are the optimum requirements for a PRL, then probably there'll be refinements in the way that eccentric viewing is taught. And I think in terms of the future, it might be that different types of eccentric viewing training become more used, such as the perceptual learning types of tasks, where you actually try to train the peripheral retina to perform better. So it's not so much about locating the area, it's about making sure that area can really do the reading task more effectively.
Do you think anything will emerge to replace eccentric viewing?
I think the most likely thing to come about will be in various sorts of electronic displays. So there are already different sorts of programs which have been devised. There's one by Robin Walker, which the Macular Society have on their website, called the EV Reader, which is a system of text scrolling, and it's an iPad app where you can fix a viewpoint on the screen that the person can fixate on, and then the text scrolls past in different locations around that. So that type of text scrolling, which is relatively easy to arrange on different sorts of electronic devices, could well be the way forward in avoiding the need to actually train people to do that scrolling of text. And the other thing which has been used in the past, which is relatively old technology in a way, is prism relocation. So it has been suggested that if you put a prism in front of the eye, it deviates the light away from the scotoma onto a more effective area of the retina, onto the PRL. And so prism spectacles of various sorts have been suggested over the years. And that's also moved into intraocular lens technology as well, which is even easier to do, because at least it doesn't mean you have to have a thicker pair of spectacles in order to create this prismatic effect. Now, we did conduct in Manchester back in 2005 a randomised controlled trial of prism spectacles and found that it wasn't effective. But despite that evidence, it's still something which keeps returning, and companies keep selling spectacles which have prisms in them for patients with macular disease.
Is there any current research going on in the UK at the moment on this topic?
There's currently the EFFECT study, which is underway, based at Moorfields Eye Hospital. And they're looking at a similar eccentric viewing training with steady eye strategy. as we've been discussing from the Macular Society. And they're also looking at various control groups where controls where people just practice reading, and they're also looking at training a particular PRL rather than just relying on the patient's own PRL. They specifically look to see whether there's an alternative position on the retina that would be more effective. So they've just finished recruiting for that study, and we'll be reporting shortly on that.
Chris and Anthony, thanks.